Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Thursday morning. And we welcome in our friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports on our 102.5, The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Charles, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, gents. How you doing this morning?
Doing awesome. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. So, Charles, the Chiefs have punched their ticket to the Super Bowl yet again, going for Super Bowl number 3 in this stretch here. As you watch this continue to unfold, and this one feels a little different just because it felt like they had more problems heading into the playoffs than normally, but how do you put into words this accomplishment for this group, specifically with Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, and Travis Kelce?
I mean, it's impressive. I wrote back in November, and I had completely forgotten about it until my editor pointed it out. You know, I had done this piece after seeing the Chiefs saying, like, hey, they've kind of got a defense that's capable of carrying this team when Mahomes needs it. I'd completely forgotten about that. That's how long the season goes. And, you know, I'm on the field for Detroit, San Francisco, and I'm watching the game on the big board, the Jumbotron or whatever. And you know, I'm kind of watching Baltimore get taken apart. And he texted me and he said, hey, look at this. He wrote this back in November. And, you know, it's a testament to, I think, the way they've shaped that team as they've moved forward, added a lot of, you know, good young pieces to, you know, to the defense, particularly the secondary. I still think, though, it's just otherworldly, some of the things that Patrick Mahomes is able to do. This is not obviously 100% on him, this success and moving forward, but the game he and Kelce had against Baltimore was, I mean, I don't know what he can't do at this point. And we were sitting there at the game, the Niners-Lions game, and Jarrett Bell, longtime NFL reporter, sitting next to me, and he just said, the guy's Michael Jordan. He's like, there's no getting around it. That's where he is. I actually think it's different. I think he's Tiger Woods. Like, I look at the start that he's had in such a short period of time as a starter. If he's able to win his third Super Bowl, realistically projecting, I never could have thought anybody could catch Tom Brady, the 7 Super Bowls, but he's on his way. And there's nothing that he does now to me that's not at the very top of the league, whether it's leadership, whether it's, you know, we talk about the arm angles, arm strength, all these different things. He's quite easily could be the MVP every single season of this league, particularly if it was an award that we voted on in February rather than voting on it in early January. He'd probably be, you know, the MVP every year or second every single season. So it's just remarkable. I don't know what else I can really say at this point about the Chiefs as an organization, as Patrick Mahomes as a player. I would like to see, I'm curious moving forward. I am going to be very curious to see what it looks like, because he eventually is going to lose Kelce, and I'm curious what that would look like for Mahomes. I always wondered that about Brady. Like, you know, take Gronk away from him, let's see what it looks like. Obviously, took Gronk away, and Gronk stepped away in New England, and it affected Brady pretty significantly. I think that's the one player that has just been that common thread for Mahomes throughout all these years that I would like to see how he will adjust and how that franchise will adjust when eventually they don't have him.
Well, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about the Detroit effing Lions. here, you know, I got into a little bit with Kevin Clark. I have a lot of respect for him. He does a great job for the Ringer, but I feel like, Charles, whenever things like decisions like that happen, you've got your like young NFL media who are always going to defend the coach. And then you've got, like, you know, you got, like, Mad Dog Russo, like, they don't know who Otto Graham is. And it's like, can there be some middle ground with this?
Sure.
Like, can we have middle ground that, like, there are situations where it's okay to, like, try a field goal? I mean, where do you come down on that whole thing?
I think one of the things, and I said it at the time as we were watching it unfold, part of the experience of becoming a great head coach is knowing when to go against your own nature. Like, there's always going to be opportunities in a season and even in a game where you're like, this is the kind of coach I am. This is the kind of decisions that I make. And standing there and going, no, you know what, this time I'm going to surprise everybody. And I'm going to go against, you know, what my nature is consistently, you know, in a way that benefits the team. And I kind of thought in the first half when he took the field goal at the end, I was like, oh, okay. Like I felt like that was the prudent move. Now, normally, you know, you're sitting, I think what they had the ball at like the 3 yard line and we're like, he's going to go for it. Right? Like this is his thing. He always goes for the touchdown. Instead, he took the field goal and we all kind of sat there and like, yeah, look at that. He kept the momentum on his side. He held it. He secured it. Well, then the second half, you know, particularly the first field goal opportunity, Dan Wetzel from Yahoo is sitting with me and, you know, he's going for it. And Dan, I thought, said something that was really astute. He's like, look, if he takes the field goal here, you know, and again, I know the percentages, it wasn't like it was an automatic given their, you know, their kicker's performance at that distance. You know, Dan was like, you're just resetting the halftime
exactly.
table. Exactly.
That's right. Exactly and, what and, I and, said and, too.
Now, but what I said to Dan was, yeah, but you know, if he picks this up here and they're able to score a touchdown, I felt like at that point you've broken their backs. And if you don't, it's still a 14-point lead. You know, you still have the 2-touchdown lead. Like, it's not an emergency situation at that point. So I kind of felt like there was no absolute wrong decision there. If they missed it, which they didn't, they went for it, they missed, they didn't pick it up. I was like, all right, well, now you have to be able to back up that decision. You can't make a multitude of other mistakes over the course of the game, which they did. You know, big fumble, you go for it another time on fourth down. Like, he complicated things by removing a margin of error the rest of that game. You know, it thinned out significantly. And I'm with you if he had, you know, look, if he had kicked it, the margin of error is much wider. You know, you continue to take time off the clock. I do think there's a middle ground, though, and I think we'd all be lying to ourselves if Dan Campbell doesn't learn something from that situation. Like, it's I just refuse to believe that having gone through it, having time to think about it, and really reflect on what he said after the game, which was just like, hey, I trusted my guys. Like, I'm paraphrasing here, but he's like, I'm trusting my guys. I thought we could pick it up. Like, that's how I felt. You know, he's just going to have to learn from that moving forward. The one I will say this though, Ben Johnson returning is a heck of a prize that they get out of nowhere. Because I think everybody thought Johnson's gone. That's what's really scary about this. You lose offensive continuity in the staff. And now we never know. Well, now him returning, I think it takes a little sting out of losing that game. And I say that as someone that, Joe, you and I, we're from Michigan. We know how rough that was for everybody in Michigan, and it won't be the same kind of run ever again because it was so special this year. You lose the special. They've done it now. It's not now there's more of an expectation of it where I think it was just sort of a, you know, it was a theme park ride this season. That theme park ride is now removed and replaced with pressure, but I think getting Ben Johnson back for them was such a huge win, you know, that helps them into this offseason rather than just sort of the crushing aspect of you were halfway from a Super Bowl that would have been probably the best thing to happen to Michigan in decades.
So, Charles, what's your read on the Ben Johnson situation with him for what seems like a second year in a row, basically just turning down and taking his name out of the head coaching search?
I'll tell you what. It's interesting, after it happened, I was stunned because I thought, like everybody else, everything I had heard from agents, other people in the league, like, they want him, he's like a done deal, it's going to happen. And then when it didn't, I thought it was really interesting that you sort of, two narratives got out, and the initial one was like, geez, Washington, it seemed like you want a lot of money. It was like this weird, like, I'm like, wait a minute. Commanders knew what kind of money he was going to be going, like asking for at that point. Like, it's the agents, that's already, everybody knows at that stage, if you're going to hire this guy after the Lions get knocked out of the playoffs, you've already talked that over. So to me, instantaneously, I was like, I don't know, maybe this guy's held back, you know, when push came to shove. And I'll when we did our piece on like ranking jobs, I had a guy say to me, and I thought this was something people should always consider with a Bobby Slowick or a Ben Johnson. He said, look, and I'm paraphrasing, but he's like, if I'm attached to a great situation, you know, if I got a great quarterback, a great offense, we have continuity, all these different things, and things are going really well for me, I'm not sprinting to leave that spot. You know, he's like, I know the whole 1 of 32 thing, all that. He said, but I'm going to be a little more picky if I can be. And for Johnson, I think from last season to this season, we saw a big step forward for him and the Lions. And I think when you look at that team, unless something goes catastrophically wrong, they're lined for another big step next year, unless they just crater to pressure, unless, you know, who knows, injuries, other different things. But he's in a great situation, doesn't have to necessarily leave if it's something that he feels like, hey, there are going to be more opportunity. And I think there will be more opportunities for him if the trajectory he retained from 2022 to 2023 extends to next season. He's going to have more and potentially better opportunities. And I think it revealed a little bit about Washington as well, because the candidate list to me was a little odd, because now Johnson's out. You look at kind of who's sitting there. They have a handful of like defensive candidates now that are still there, and no one's taken the job. No one's gotten, I guess, been offered the job, because I think Aaron Glenn would take it if it was offered to him. I think Dan Quinn would absolutely take it if it was offered to him. Anthony Weaver, I think, would take it if it was offered to him. And so I'm sitting here like, what is going on? And I don't know anything specific, but I will tell you, if we get through Friday and one of those three guys doesn't have that head coaching job, now I'm starting to wonder if maybe there's another candidate that they're going to remix this thing with. Maybe there's somebody else that all of a sudden might pop up in the mix over the weekend. I just feel like if you get beyond, we're already at what? We're more than 3 weeks. It's like 23, 24 days since Rivera moved on. You still don't have a head coach. You just lost out on Ben Johnson. If one of these three guys isn't your head coach by the end of the day Friday, I'm like, come Monday, we might have a new candidate in Washington.
Vrabel.
but that's the thing. Like, they haven't asked. They haven't shown any interest in Belichick up to this point. And unless it's super, super secret, like we're talking like private jet on the tarmac kind of thing, nobody, and I've asked everybody, like, what's the deal? No Belichick interest up until this point. And there's different theories about why that is. Some people are like, look, they're not going to get involved with him unless they know they're going to hire him. They're not going to go through the Arthur Blank Falcons dog and pony show. They're just going to come out and go, we're hiring him, rather than go, we're having him in. We're having him in again. We're going to do dinner, like all these things. And then, like, it's the same deal up until, as far as I know, last night, I hadn't heard any requests to speak with Ray. So maybe they're taking this more underground because of what happened with Ben Johnson and feeling a little bit embarrassed by that. But I feel like you go through this weekend without a head coach there. It's something, you're taking a left turn somehow.
We'll have more with Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. We continue our conversation with Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, now here on the program. Rex Road, the floor is yours.
Charles, so Denard Wilson coming in as Titans DC. It appears, I know, like, our Giants writer Dan Dugan, it sounded like they were very interested in him. Other teams were interested in him, so kind of a rising star hire. Yeah, and of course it's been with the Rams. So, yeah, how significant is that? What do you think of him? What do you know of him? But also, big picture with the Titans staff, you know, it's obviously a first-time play calling, you know, head coach. Sure. There's going to be a young OC who's taking a step forward. Like, sometimes these younger coaches bring in a veteran somewhere, and I know the staff is early, but what do you think about a staff of like head coach and both coordinators, you know, as I guess, quote unquote, up and comers?
It's interesting. One of the things about Wilson that's a little different, I mean, he started his career as a scout. You know, I'm always interested in these guys who go from, you know, Brian Flores is one of those guys who began as in personnel and then moved over to coaching. You know, yeah, Wilson, like I said, I've talked to people in with the Rams about him before. They, you know, they still have a really high opinion of him. I wouldn't have been surprised if he even made his way to LA after Raheem Morris left. But, you know, like you said, a ton of experience. The Ravens, I will say this, running the secondary for the Ravens last year was no cakewalk because Mike McDonald ran a super complicated defense, asked a lot of the DBs. There was a lot of position flexibility there. Kyle Hamilton was, you know, hey, you want to play, you know, this deep third coverage for Kyle Hamilton. We're also going to have him in man-to-man. We're also going to, you know, blitz him a lot. And, you know, so Wilson certainly saw a pretty significant part of a scheme and was overseeing a number of individuals who were asked to do a lot of, like, complicated things, which I think is great. Being in Philly, he was in Philly at a time where, you know, great DBs. Obviously, you had the Super Bowl run in 2022. I remember him being around, like, he's on that Bowl staff with the Jets and Greg Williams. You know, Greg Williams. I would say Greg Williams, you know, as you get to know him, Denard Wilson, and spend time with him, you're going to see some Greg Williams in him. Like, you're going to see a lot of he's an intense dude. He's got a lot of energy, a lot of fire. You know, being around Bowles and that scheme where Bowles loves to be a blitz guy, Greg Williams loves to be a blitz guy. They're both very aggressive coaches. I think there's a lot of that in him. And I think that's good. It adds, anytime you've had someone who's had a diversity of experience and been under a lot of strong personalities himself over time, particularly Greg Williams, he adds a ton of energy to your staff. He expects a lot of young players, and I don't think he's afraid to push guys. And you'll see that from him. And I'm curious to see. I'll tell you what. Let me ask you this: who do you think gets the OC job there? Because I have a thought.
I don't know. If you, go ahead. I don't. I mean, there's three guys we know of right now.
I will tell you right now: if Eric Studzville and Denard Wilson are on the same staff, like, enjoy that, because they are two of the most intense people that you could possibly ask for. And, you know, Studzville is nice. Another guy who's ton of experience. Like, to me, it would be interesting because you're taking, as you said, this sort of up-and-coming, you know, head coach, and you would be hiring, if it's Studzville, right? And that was the name to me that really stuck out when I saw it, because of his massive length of experience, the different things he's done, the fact he's been an interim coach at one point, head coach. So that really stuck out, and I thought, wow, like, if that's the route they go, you're really putting two ultra experienced coordinators into place, and that frees Callahan up to you know, look at the team globally, focus a ton on the offensive scheme himself. You know, Studzville would definitely be the type of guy who can help him implement it and carry out pretty much anything, particularly with the running game. I mean, he's for years and years and years, he's had this reputation of being, you know, an ace at putting together, you know, concepts, running concepts, you know, the schemes, all these different things. He's been retained on staffs. Like, I thought it was interesting, Mike McDaniel, when he got the Dolphins job, he retained him. So he's someone that is seen, he's got the kind of value where you see, even with staff changes, he's usually one of those ones where the incoming staff's like, yeah, let's keep that guy around, because he brings a lot to the table. But really intense dude, extremely intense dude. So in some ways, even kind of reminds me of Vrabel. Like, and it's very limited interaction on my part. Don't know. It's not like I know him really well, but in the spare few times I've been around him, I'm like, man, this guy's intense. So yeah, I mean, I like the idea of pairing experienced coordinators with a young head coach. Now, I will say this, and I go back to when Sean McVay and Wade Phillips were working together, and you can get, and McVay's a different cat, so I don't want to stick this on Callahan, but, you know, you get, especially younger coaches, as the league changes and it gets more complicated, they start to expect their coordinators to kind of change with the times, update their schemes, bring complicated concepts to the table. And sometimes you get older coordinators who are like, yeah, I don't really do that. Like, I run what I run. we're not going to change a lot from that. And, you know, we're going to put hat on a hat and execute. And that's how we're going to be able to be a high level, you know, unit. It didn't work with Wade. It was the Rams. Like, at some point, McVay was like, yeah, you know what? I got to get to somebody else who I feel like can throw something a little more complicated on the field than really what Wade is doing. So that can happen with older coordinators and young coaches. I say that, I want to walk very, you know, lightly here, because I want to tread lightly, because McVay's a freaking, he's just, you know, he's a super ADD, sleeps 3 hours a day kind of guy. And I don't know, I don't want to put that on Callahan. But that's just the only flip side, I would say, is sometimes you can get older coordinators who are very kind of set. And there was Fangio is a good example in Miami. You know, I know Fangio wanted to get back to Philly, but it wasn't perfect there in Miami with him. And I think part of that had to do with just sort of how Vic is. And he's, you know, not going to change a multitude of things in his scheme, whether his players like it or not.
Really interesting stuff. Charles, appreciate you as always. Thanks so much for taking time to be with us this week, and we'll talk to you next week.
Wait, I'm going to ask you again. What was the Rex Road rant? I got to know now every time I come on, just because I need to know. I want to know what's in his mind.
We were ranting scary about place. College sports and the Vols and stuff. Just, you know. Like
old guy stuff.
Well, just, you know. I mean, lawsuits. You got college head coaches fleeing to the NFL. It's, you know, you just saw this yesterday, right? Halfley going to the Packer. I mean, how many? Yeah. You know, so basically just about that, yeah. Thanks for asking,
right.
Buddy.
All right. Yeah, I was want
to
know.
I might have to do one on Dan Campbell tomorrow.
All right, man. Leave him alone. We all make mistakes, okay? Yeah. I made my share of mistakes. He's got to learn from it, right?
Sure. Yeah. We'll see. We'll 7 see and 10 it. Next year.
We'll see.
All right, guys. I'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, Charles.
7 and 10. What is wrong with you, man? Come on.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, our guest on Robbie and Rexo. We'll take your thoughts on what Charles had to say. React to the Titans' hiring of their new defensive coordinator coming up next as well. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Thursday morning. Appreciate Charles Robinson for being with us in the last segment. Joe, a couple of developments over the break there. Number one, Nick Keyser does not listen to our show, which I think we already knew anyway. But
that's not a development.
What are we talking about next?
I thought earlier he actually for a minute looked like he was looking in here, like he was listening to what we were saying. But yeah. I don't know. He might not. Yeah. He might have been like listening to music and just looking off into the distance. I can't tell.
I'm looking off. I'm not listening.
That was good.
All right.
Way to go.
He's just starting to fight back a little bit.
I like it.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. Also, it appears, according to my Twitter feed, Joe, that Paul Kuharsky from PaulKuharsky.com has been blocked by Tom Pelissero on Twitter from the NFL Network.
That's beautiful. So Kuharsky is becoming one of the biggest trolls in NFL media,
yeah.
And I'm here for it.
He's all over the insiders of Schefter and Pelissero, and apparently Pelissero had enough and just blocked him.
So here's the tweet that Kuharsky got blocked.
Tom Pelissero reports Jason Hoedlin got quickly hired by the Bears. Great for him. Hope this isn't start of a national people trending soft. Sorry for you questioning you mouthpiece of agents.
Which is a great tweet, except that he spelled H-E-A-R instead of H-E-R-E. You totally blew it, Kuharsky. Blew it.
He can edit it. He has his little subscribed to Twitter Blue. So,
that's true.
You know?
He is. That's true. 5 minutes is still sitting there, PK. Fix it.
It's actually an hour, I think. So hopefully
he
can realize it.
Oh, so sad. Sad.
Sad.
But I love it, though. Keep trolling, baby.
Yeah, keep going. What do we make of the Titans' new defensive coordinator hire of Denard Wilson coming in for the Baltimore Ravens?
Interesting stuff there from C-Rob. On Denard Wilson, the intensity thing. You can see the intensity for sure in interviews with him, no doubt about that. So that is interesting. And you know, good point by Charles. Like I've been talking about. I mean, the thing is, it's like first-time coordinators. But, like, if it is Studsville, you're talking about a guy who has been in the league for a long time, going back to the late 90s. So it's like he just hasn't had a shot to be a coordinator. He has been co-OC with the Dolphins in 21, you know. So, I mean, it's that is that would be a little bit more of the veteran guy
right.
model than I've kind of given credit for. And based on Charles's description of Sue, I'm here for it.
Yeah,
if that's
absolutely.
The case, let's get some intensity in here. Now, I know that's where, and in fact, speaking of Kaharski, you see, he'd flip out because it's like, I don't want somebody who likes running the bull. You know, it's this guy's a – let me tell you something. Dolphins last year, great offense, and obviously they didn't beat – you know, they had some meltdowns against great teams, all that stuff, but they overall, one of the most fun offenses I've seen in the league. And, man, a lot of that was their running concept.
Sure.
And their running – and their talent, right, of course.
Speed,
but, yeah, sure. But just saying, running the football, I'm always in favor of it and always will be.
You're fired.
Yeah, I mean, that's old. Yeah, 1983 offense. No, running the ball, baby, always works.
No, so, you know, I'm interested to see how this goes. Denard Wilson's 41, Brian Callahan's 39, to your point. So a younger kind of foundation of the coaching staff here. Wilson, defensive backs coach in Baltimore. So you saw Mike McDonald get hired as head coach in Seattle yesterday. So the Ravens have now lost their DC and their defensive backs coach, Wilson coming to the Titans to be the DC, which is interesting. Like, you wondered maybe if there was a spot there for him in Baltimore, but he ends up here with the Titans. And, you know, we spend so much time talking about offense, but we went through it earlier in the show. Like, there are some legitimate questions on the defensive side of the ball that have to be answered, particularly in the secondary. I think there's at least one player at corner, maybe two, that you're going to have to add that play significant roles for your team next year. And whether that's via the draft or free agency, I don't know. But I'm really interested to see what this looks like. You know, Charles was going through the Greg Williams part of this, like the description there. And, you know, we played a clip earlier in the show of Wilson talking about being molded by Todd Bowles and Greg Williams. And the thing that stands out to me about both of those guys is incredibly aggressive and a whole lot of blitzing. And maybe what you see from the Titans moving forward here.
Yeah, I'd say that's a fair assessment for sure. And again, you know, the specific work with secondaries. I mean, that's it's been good. You know, I mean the track record is good. I thought, you know, I liked Baltimore going into this year, maybe more than some people, but I that was the question. That was the side of the ball. I was like, man, that, you know, I mean, who knew that, like, Clowney was going to be what he was this year suddenly, right? But they were fantastic. I mean, even in the Chiefs game, we're giving Mahomes the flowers, and he deserves them, but I think five straight possessions, they forced them to punt in the second half of that game. I mean, it wasn't on them, so now, look, I think it's a promising hire. The OC hire now, which was already more of a focus, becomes the sole focus, and you would think that would be popping soon here. Very interesting among the three candidates we know of right now.
Yep. Does Studesville feel like the leader in the clubhouse to you? I mean, it just kind of a wait and see kind of thing. But
yeah, I don't know. I don't have a feel on that. Again, you go with those guys, you're going back to the first days of Brian Callahan's experience in the league goes back to, and in fact, and so Josh McDaniels brought him in, and Studesville is the interim head coach in 2010. So, yeah, so right there, he has experience with him as the head coach, and he is like low man on the totem pole on that staff going back, you know, 14 years ago. So it's really interesting. Then obviously he was retained by Fox, John Fox.
Yep.
Right. Yeah. Retained by John Fox through that entire time. That is a good point too by Charles, the staffer who gets retained. I mean, Arthur Smith was that guy here. He's just, you know, whoever comes in, like, okay, that guy's good. Keep that guy, you know. And we've seen what he's become.
Yeah.
The savior for the Pittsburgh Steelers
yes,
offense. Who
yes.
about to bring in Ryan Tannehill.
Derrick Henry.
Hey.
Najee Harris, Derrick Henry combo backfield.
Jalen Warren's also mm-hmm. there, as Tony Romo just found out last
week.
Yeah,
that is true. Romo, whew. It's getting rough, man.
Yeah, I still like. I don't hate it, but it's not as good as it used to be.
It's getting rough.
Yeah.
102.5, 106.3, The Game, officially inviting you to our first ever Super Saturday. Join us Saturday, February 10th at New Heights Brewery in Nashville from 1 to 5 p.m. for this fun, family-friendly soup fest benefiting the Nashville Predators Foundation. Tickets only $10. Enjoy live music, games for kids, and come sample some soup from Mafiosa's, 615 Chutney, Weston Hotel, Jasper's, and a whole lot more. To purchase tickets and to see all participating restaurants, go to thegamenashville.com/soup. You can also enter to win tickets to Super Saturday. Just text in the keyword soup now to 615-737-1025. That's soup to 615-737-1025. We'll take more of your thoughts on the hiring of Denard Wilson as the Titans defensive coordinator. Also get to more thoughts on the Nashville Predators as they had a tough loss last night entering into the All-Star break. All that coming up. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day. Robbie and Rex Road brought to you by Chuck McDowell and Medical House Calls, Middle Tennessee's best medical care in the comfort and safety of your own home. For more information, go to medicalhousecalls.com. Medical House Calls, where the nearest clinic is your home. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Thursday morning. Preds entering into the All-Star break last night, losing 4-2 to the LA Kings. And that's a tough one, Joe. I mean, I thought, honestly, they played pretty well. I mean, the first period, they put up 17 shots. They absolutely blitzed LA in the third period, and either Dave Riddick, Big Save Dave, made some saves for the Kings, or they hit the post, or just couldn't quite convert there. They're having a tough time finishing right now, especially guys that are not named Philip Forsberg and Ryan O'Reilly and things like that. So a tough loss for the Predators last night. They're off now until February the 10th. So you got the All-Star break coming up this weekend, bye week next week. They're back at it February 10th. At home, where you've got basically 30 games to figure out whether or not you're going to make the playoffs. Barry Trotz joined Jared yesterday and talked about, you know, the next 8 to 10 games probably going to determine the path he takes at the deadline. But now that we sit here and the All-Star break is officially here, what do you make of what you've seen from the Predators to this point? And what do you think about the way things are trending right now for Nashville?
Well, it's not a good trend. I'm with you on I thought they played pretty well. I think you've got a little bit of momentum with some guys like Cody Glass. And I think Tommy Novak, he was very noticeable last night. Tomasino, you know, is being more of a threat. So, I mean, like, the whole issue here, not the whole issue, but a big issue is secondary scoring. So maybe you're seeing a little momentum in that regard. Of course, now you have this long break, so I don't know. Is that good or bad? You were mentioning earlier, Andrew Brunet, talking about the break being good for the top line, which is a huge amount of weight on their shoulders. So that would be good for them. UC Saros, you know, there's at least one goal last night that it's like, man, you can't let that one in, you know? And so the deadline stuff is obviously the – buy, sell. We expect Tyson Barrie to be somewhere. I don't know what kind of return they're getting for him.
Not much.
There's some other UFAs among the forwards who could be moved out. Any sort of significant buy to me is off the table. Should be.
Yeah.
Right?
It just doesn't make sense with their timeline, right? I mean, unless you're buying somebody, and I don't even know who that would be at this point, that you feel good about moving into the future that could be like a top six forward for you long term, then I don't think you even consider that if you're the Predators.
Right. And then, of course, you know, there's the Saros thing. You know, Willie on Caroline Willie D-Mace yesterday brought up, I thought, a good point as they talked about that. And also, you know, Barry Trotz was, as always, very open. Good interview by Jared Stillman on his program yesterday with Barry Trotz. And basically, to summarize what he said, it was like, blow me away with a particular offer, then, you know, I mean, but yeah, I'm taking calls.
Yeah.
But Willie's point was, like, if you don't deal Saros at the trading deadline now, then, you know, like, it would be a bad idea to, like, have him go into the last year of his deal with that as a possibility. Like, in other words, it's almost like you have to kind of look at this like this is when you make the choice, or you're kind of – it's a lot more leaning toward you are signing him to some sort of long-term deal, right?
Yeah, I mean, you could still trade him this summer because he's got a year left on his deal. But to your point, he's also eligible for a contract extension July 1st. And you would figure, like, you'd want to have a decision by that point. So I'm interested to see how that goes. I mean, also, is there a team out there right now, whether it's a New Jersey or a Carolina or somebody like that, that would be desperate enough to knock your socks off if you're Barry Trotz? I mean, that's another thing to keep an eye on as the trade deadline approaches.
And it doesn't help when you're talking about a guy with right now a 901.
Exactly.
Instead of the usual 918. You know, I mean, that's 920 range. But I still think he's a heck of a goaltender, but that doesn't help, right? But yes, do you believe he's the last piece for a run? Is there a team out there and then you could actually get the kind of return you're, or something close to the kind of return you're hoping for?
Well, can they get some secondary scoring as the unofficial second half of the playoff push begins here coming up after the break? I mean, if they can and you get some of these younger guys to start to score, then you're going to be right there. If you can't, I think that's a lot to ask for Forsberg and O'Reilly and Nyquist to carry the whole load offensively. So we'll see if they're able to do that. They'll be back coming up on February 10th. Joseph, that's going to do it for us today. We'll be back 6 a.m. tomorrow. Jason Big Joe is coming up next. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3, The Game.